Can you hear me?
Yes. Bruce, sorry I haven't sent you an email saying congratulations, and I hope you're having fun when you leave us next month. I will miss you very much.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I will have fun.
I think he's ready to join the Climate Policy Commission now and work on the economy.
Well, put it this way, my central group will be Soheva. But uh-huh. Because we impact climate policy and transportation, we'll be around. We'll be around.
Yeah.
And Linda, I do have an announcement for today's meeting.
Okay. How are you, Paula?
Doing well. How are you, Linda?
I'm just ducky.
It's a fun day in May today, huh?
I like it. I hate the heat. This is good weather for me.
It's good stuff. I was loving, I came back from my parents' place and looking up in the hills and seeing all that snow and frost. I thought of you, Scott. I was like, watershed's doing good things right now.
There is definitely some more snow. I checked the webcams up on Mount Ashland and it did snow up there. So there's a little bit more snow.
Every little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a chat with Medford Water Commission today, and, you know, from their supply side, they're looking pretty good overall. Big Butte Springs is down, but mm-hmm. it's been trending down over the last couple of years. You know, Lost Creek is still really good. I mean, it's so funny how you jump around regionally here and not very far and distance-wise, and it's pretty dramatic, the difference.
Yeah, it really is. Amazing the microclimates and how it impacts the hydrology and the terrain with the terrain.
Yep.
Can you still hear me?
Hi. I was trying to unmute.
Hi, Corinne.
Hi. Boy, it's sure been hailing. We have a little puppy. And they don't know about hail. And
uh-oh.
They're so excited to go outside. And then he stops and he looks. He's thinking that we're throwing things at him. He thinks we were doing it to him.
I didn't do anything wrong, really.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, what did I do wrong? Is Linda there?
I'm here.
Linda, hi. I didn't get to ask you ahead of time. Can I renominate you for chairperson?
I'd be honored if you would do it.
Okay.
Darn, I was going to do that.
Oh,
oh well.
You can second it.
I will second it. Okay. I reserve my right to second.
You're muted. Mark, you're muted.
Yeah, because I said that's not Shannon.
Yeah, I think Shannon sent, I think this is Holly, correct? Shannon sent Holly Shannon's link.
Sorry about that. I didn't notice. That's why
she wants to participate in public forum. And once we get to that point, we can unmute Holly Shannon and let her talk.
Okay.
Yeah. FYI too, I got word Catherine is traveling and most likely won't be attending, and Derek is on his way returning back to Ashland and traveling, and he didn't think he would be back in time to attend.
Okay, but we have a quorum.
We do have a quorum.
So we're good.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to call the May 20th Transportation Commission meeting to order. Do we want to do roll call, Corinne? We've got Mark, Bruce, me, Paula, Officer McLennan, Scott Fleury, Holly Christensen, and Joe Graff.
Yay.
And you.
I don't know the Christensen person, do I?
She's a person that's going to speak in public forum, I believe.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Announcements. First, we want to reschedule the June meeting from June 17th to June 24th so that Scott can meet with his father who's coming into town. He hasn't seen him for a couple years. So I think we can accommodate him that way and still have him available on the 24th.
I will not be available on the 24th.
Darn.
Fortunately, I will be, so I don't break my perfect record.
Okay.
Well, it's my birthday, and no offense, my wife has
Dinner plans
and stuff like that. So my wife wins out over Transportation Commission. No offense.
Oh. You're a dedicated.
We could celebrate your birthday if you came.
Yeah. you'll miss me singing happy birthday. I've got a good one. Yeah. Okay.
Well, have fun, Mark, anyway.
Any other comments?
You're not inviting us to come. I hope you have a great time.
We'll crash the party after the meeting.
Okay. We'll be those noisy people that rev their engines in the overpass thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have too good of a memory.
Yeah.
Linda, if you want, I'll go ahead and do my little thing quickly.
Yes, please.
I'm not sure if you guys saw it or not, but Rogue Advocates won their appeal for Grand Terrace annexation. And in that, they listed the Transportation Commission and its members, and the Planning Commission as its members, as some of the deciding factors. So when this goes back before us again in the Planning Commission, know that our name's already been put out there on Rogue Advocates' site.
Wow.
Okay.
You know what? I haven't seen the results of our ballot. Does anybody know? Did the RVTD stuff go through? Good.
It did. And Jenna, I can't remember her last name. She
Thank
was
you.
Voted on the... Yes.
Good. She's
she
so
was,
good.
And Don Stone, I think, was the other.
Hmm.
How about Carl McNair?
Yes, Carl got on. Mm-hmm.
Good. He works for City of Medford, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah.
He's a. What's his title? Transportation manager?
I think he's the traffic operations manager.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good guy. He's into trains.
Yeah, he came
he
from
wants
Piedmont,
to get into
I
rail.
Believe. And transit up in Portland previously.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention that May 12th, we began fire season. So May is Be Firewise Month. And if anybody wants more information about that with the city, go to fireadaptedashland.org and get more information on how you can be Firewise. Okay, any other announcements? Okay, consent agenda. We've got any corrections to the minutes? Did we get the names all spelled right this time? I was going to bug Shannon about that, but I guess she's not here, so I can't.
Yeah, she's feeling a little
time.
Under the weather.
Okay. Well, I hope she gets better. Okay, next, public forum.
Do we have to vote on the minutes?
Oh, we have to vote on it.
Yeah.
I move to accept them.
Thank you, Corrine. And a second?
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we got it. Okay, public forum.
We have Holly Christensen here for public forum, and I will turn it over to her. I think generally we give people 3 minutes. So it's your stage.
Awesome. Thank you. Definitely, I wrote everything down because I knew I would probably be feeling flight or fight response right now. So even though it's just a small group of friendly people. I've been wanting to express concern about the disappearance of so many bike parking racks over the years from downtown, like the one from the in front of the Varsity. There was one on the corner across from the Lithia Park entrance, across the street from there. I'm pretty sure there used to be one at the Armory. I don't remember always having to lock my bike to the railing. And now recently the ones at the playground have just been taken out too. So, you know, one of the racks, especially the one across from the park entrance, you know, that one was my favorite one for when I wanted to go downtown at night. Like if the other bike racks were full, usually I was the one kind of on the outskirts. I was still kind of close to people. Otherwise you got to kind of go across the street where it's dark and bushes and, you know, there's a boulder and a sign and a trash can that you have to navigate into this small parking area. It's not my favorite parking, but anyway, just as a car-free person for the last 21 years here in Ashland, it's just disheartening to experience this, and it just worsens, I'm sure, the parking and congestion issues for cars. I see volunteer safety patrols giving fake tickets to people that do lock up to other things when bike racks are full. So it's, I think I've gotten one once that says I'm going to get fined $250 if I do it again. This was years ago, but I don't know. I just think threatening and punishing the people that do ride their bikes downtown is just not a great way. It's not a good solution to the lack of bike parking, like discouraging people from riding that way. It just seems like a very unfriendly solution. So, I just wanted to see if there was, you know, some hope, like a plan, if there's a plan, a redevelopment plan or something to start repopulating the bike racks downtown, or if there, what the barriers are to that. And then if they are put in, like, you know, if they consult people that kind of know how to position them, it seems like a lot of times bike racks just have kind of a lot of problems accessible. Being accessible. So, and that I would be happy to help volunteer with any solutions to this. Was that 3 minutes? Was that pretty good?
That was great. Great. Do we want to make any comments about this? We can talk about the new bike rack that's being put in at Scout. We, as a commission, we took out a 15-minute spot there, and a new bike rack will be put in there. Some of the bike racks, I think, if they're set up that they end up blocking the sidewalk, that becomes a problem, and they may be taken out for that reason. Scott, do you want to make any other comments about it since we have time?
Yeah, just a couple things. I believe the one bike rack you're referencing was adjacent to the bridge in Lithia Park. On the Windburn side, yeah, I believe that was taken out, and from what I recollect, hasn't been put back. It was part of that lighting project that was done where they lit that side of the road. I think it's on a catch list somewhere to replace that one specifically. The bike corral at Scout is now installed, so there is a bike corral there in the 15-minute space. We have plans to install 3 to 4 bike racks in front of City Hall and remove that planter that's in front of the building there and install bike racks there. I also have a plan to install some staple racks where the bike share used to be on the plaza side where the sidewalk was installed. So we plan to install some more there. And those are kind of a couple of the short-term additions that we're looking at making to add some more bike parking in downtown. And I think part of just tonight, we'll be talking about our transportation system plan update. And one of the components of that is the bike mode analysis. And this has been referenced previously as well, as improving bike parking downtown through corrals or racks on blocks where it makes sense and they can be installed without obstructing the pedestrian passage and things like that. So we'll be looking at that again. Just from a functionality standpoint as well. But we have a couple short-term additions that will be put in the system for additional bike parking.
Yeah, and if you're interested, we are going to have a position open on the Transportation Commission coming up at the end of June. So as a bike enthusiast, if you're interested in joining us, that'd be great. Okay.
Awesome. Thanks for all that information. I think it's a little more hopeful, and yeah, maybe I would consider that.
Okay.
Awesome.
Watch us anytime.
All right.
We're a fun group. Okay. Next on the agenda, we have the crash report. Officer McLennan is here to help us out.
Good evening.
Evening.
Nothing real major to report this month. Crashes are going up a little bit more. So when people are just starting to get out and move. Didn't really have any major injuries there out of the crashes this month. We did have one where it was a minor injury. The lady had pulled out of the Albertsons parking lot onto Tolman. The south end of the parking lot is a right turn only, but she went left. And so caught another car there. It sounded like it was just a possible injury. Three of the crashes were DUI. Two of the crashes actually that were DUI were actually on private property. They were not on city streets. And of course we had the welcome sign that I talked about last month. Thank goodness that hasn't been hit again. On Starflower, it comes up every now and then. On Starflower, off of Percy there's that little planter right in the middle. That got hit. There used to be one that was always getting struck there on Village Green right off of North Mountain. We've since taken those big rocks out many years ago because people would end up on top of the boulders. But other than that, everything was pretty quiet. Like I said, nothing major.
That's great. I want to comment on the Starflower Lane. I got a next door neighbor note from a person at that in that HOA and sent along his request to check it out for safety because he thinks he thought it was very, you know, was not a safe thing. And Scott got streets out there. I don't know if he did it himself, but went and repainted the median, and person was very happy that we actually did something. So
some things just get hit, and honestly I can't remember, but I believe there used to be a transformer box there, and I believe they never relocated it. I think it's still there.
I believe it's still there in that island, and it's at grade with the curb height, so removing that island would not be a cheap task. And so one of the things that Chuck did, our street department supervisor, is painted, and I don't know if they put the retro reflector buttons out there, but they were going to put some reflector buttons around the curb top as well, just to make it more visible, specifically at night. And those median islands are designed to slow you down as you enter a residential area. So it's not meant for you to take that curve at 25 miles an hour into a residential zone. It's specifically designed to slow you down as you head into a residential zone. So,
and in fact, 20 is too much going around those corners.
Yeah,
it is. So. It is.
Okay.
Any questions?
Were you out here when the truck got stuck at the hotel?
No.
That's the one that happened on the 26th at 4:30. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, I wasn't there for that one.
Yeah, because if you haven't seen it, there's a really low overhang over here at the hotel, and they try to take a Ryder truck and go under the hotel with it. And so I could hear all it from our house. We couldn't figure out what was going on, and so I wasn't sure who was there. But it was kind of, not for me, I mean, for the person driving, wasn't very funny. For me, it gave me some great entertainment.
Okay, well, next.
I just like
to know. Probably shouldn't have been driving because he was suspended at the time.
Yeah.
I was happy to note that the bike and pedestrian all ends this month.
That's right.
No bike or pedestrian.
No bike or ped.
Okay, next on the agenda, every year we nominate a chair and vice chair. So elections are open.
Can I talk?
Yeah.
I would like to renominate Linda.
I would like to second.
I will third it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
I'm certainly in favor, but I want to make sure I'm allowed to vote.
Why? What's wrong with you?
Well,
why? Oh.
I have received no information of being reappointed. In fact, I got no acknowledgement of submitting the application that they required, which
was a bit of an insult. You were on the council agenda.
So we've reappointed you. I apologize if you have not received.
Nobody told me anything. So
you know that happened to me too.
A little bit unprofessional.
Yeah, and that happened when I got reappointed too. I didn't find out.
Same here.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't mind so much if they didn't ask me to fill out the application again, which was kind of odd, and then never even acknowledged that it was received.
Well, you and Derek's term ends at the same time, so do we reaccept Derek as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I guess I had to watch the city council meeting, but it seems that somebody somewhere should have informed
the person that
at a minimum that their application was received. But I think Linda's a great chair. I'm happy to support her as chair.
Why, thanks.
As long as I'm allowed to.
Thanks. You know, I appreciate everybody's confidence in what I do, and I keep learning how to keep the group under control. But I really enjoy our robust conversations. And Paula, if you could make a note of that.
I have.
Mayor.
My apologies. I do apologize. That should not have happened to you. Your service is appreciated, and thank you for reapplying.
And this all revolves around developing the right process for forming commissions and in treating commissioners with respect that they deserve. Okay. I'm just so excited I got reelected. I've got a whole other year to work on the transportation system plan. Hey. Okay. Next we've got Vision Zero.
You need to elect
vice chair.
Oh shoot. Do I really? Okay. Any nominations for vice chair?
So is Derek willing to do it again, and is he eligible to do it again because of the time rule? Does anybody know?
I think Derek
would Mark want to do it?
Vice chair.
Mark?
I will gladly accept and do it. It's not a problem. Okay. But I think Joe's question is one that needs to be answered as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a limit. I think it's 3 years you can be chair or vice chair, and my memory isn't good enough to remember how long Derek has been vice chair. This is either his last chance if he wants to do it, or he can't do it again.
Yeah, it's 3 years, so, but does anybody know?
So I believe he was vice chair under Sue, and then vice chair under you, Bruce.
Right. I know he was under me. I'm not sure about Sue. Possibly.
But, you know, the other thing is he's not here, so we can't vote somebody in on a thing if they aren't there to accept it, I think.
I believe I want to say, I think Joe's right. It's either he's already passed on the 3 year or this would be his third year. If we consider Bruce and Linda, it's two, that's 2 years. And I want to say he was partially under Sue, but I can't remember exactly.
Well, Sue didn't finish her term, so I don't know.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And how all that didn't... works. And Corrine and I are the only, and Bruce are the only ones who were here then. So, and I don't remember. But did he, has he said anything to anybody? Did he talk to you, Linda, or are you, Scott,
no.
about?
No, he didn't reference anything about vice chair duties.
Yeah. And I put out a note to him about getting the application out for re-upping, but. Well,
no,
I don't know.
Nominate Mark. I would
there
still like to nominate Mark.
Okay. Is there a second?
I will second that one as well. Yes, second.
Okay. Mark, are you willing to take it on?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
It's not fair to me to give a thumbs up when Corrine can't see me. I need to make sure I give auditory responses.
That's right.
I apologize.
Right, I can't hear your head rattle.
Okay. Well, all in favor then of Mark as vice chair?
Aye.
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 Okay, Mark, you're stuck now. No longer my data guru. You're my right-hand guy. Okay. Okay, now Vision Zero. Let's see. As we agreed, we moved to proceed with Vision Zero as the overarching goal to improve safety considerations in Ashland, especially with the goal of speed reduction under ORS 810-180. In your packet is a draft of the Vision Zero resolution that I based on the City of Eugene's document, and additional points came up with the work group from Mark and Gary Schaff that I added. Do you want me to read it out, or... have you looked at it? You've got to look at it, or Scott could put it up or something. It's up to you guys. Do you have, does anybody have any other recommendations for the resolution?
I do have some quick fixes.
Okay.
If you have in front of it. I think overall it's quite good. A couple of things I think is just a little bit confusing. Point K under findings, we have traffic deaths have led to the death, which kind of doesn't make sense. So
okay.
I would suggest that be changed to most traffic deaths in Ashland have historically involved either a pedestrian or a person riding a bicycle. Except I don't know if that's true. Is that true?
Yes. Mark was going to look at the data on that. Is that right, Mark?
Yes, and then actually the information is correct.
Okay.
So if that statement is true, I think that makes more sense.
Okay.
It's clearer.
Can you say it again? Most traffic deaths?
Most traffic deaths in Ashland have historically involved either a pedestrian or a person riding a bicycle, I guess you say, as the deceased, to make it clearer. So no, that would be basically saying more than 50% of the accidents, either pedestrian or the person riding the bicycle or skateboard, was the deceased.
What do you guys think?
So we're looking at
K.
Big K.
Yeah.
I agree with Bruce. It needs some cleaning up because you have a redundancy, death and death.
Yeah, a death leads to a death is redundant. So, but if the point of the statement is that, or another way to say it is, fatal traffic accidents in Ashland have, or most fatal traffic accidents in Ashland have involved either pedestrian, person riding a bicycle, or skateboard as the deceased.
I think adding as the deceased is cumbersome. Isn't it obviously if they're fatal, somebody died?
Well, technically it could be the person driving the car.
Yeah.
You could say, I mean, the legal scholar here, like my son, would say, well, the bicycle caused the accident and the person in the car was killed. So I think it needs to be clear that the person that was killed was the pedestrian or the cyclist or the skateboarder.
How about pedestrians or persons riding a bicycle or skateboard died in more than
half the traffic accidents?
It's well over half.
Say traffic fatalities in Ashland have historically involved pedestrians or persons riding a bicycle or skateboard?
Mm-hmm. I think that's that.
Okay.
Technically, legally, it's not clear that they were the ones that died.
Yeah.
But that's why if you add as the deceased, makes it clear that they were the ones that died and not the person driving the motor vehicle.
I think that's the implication.
It's the implication, but it's
the
not.
Need to be that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm fine. I won't quibble if we just leave that alone.
I think Joe's got his hand up.
Okay. Sorry, Joe. I can't see you.
Oh, no, that's
blurt
okay.
Blurt it out.
Okay. It's always dangerous to ask people to review these things. and so let's see, the findings and the actual resolution don't seem to be parallel to one another. The findings seem to be almost all about bike and ped safety.
Yes.
And about climate.
Yes.
And the resolution doesn't really say anything about that specifically. So the resolution says we resolve to essentially have zero fatalities, which is the main thing we're talking about.
Yes.
And so when we put in things like net zero greenhouse gas emissions, we could have zero fatalities and not change our greenhouse gas emissions at all. The number H is really a strategy under Vision Zero. It's not a finding, it seems to me. So there just seem to be several of these that we could make it so much shorter by saying the life and health of Ashland residents are utmost priority, and Vision Zero is an approach that accepts no loss of life or serious injuries in the Transportation Commission, period. Because all the rest of it is kind of
fluff
around the outsides. And I think, you know, depending on how it's read and who's reading it, it's either going to be, sure, we agree with all this stuff, or why are we saying we're going to do that? So I think it could be way simpler.
I agree with you, Joe. You're really good at putting things in perspective.
But it covers, I mean, it covers everything we want to cover, but it adds a bunch of other stuff. And I think that can be a little bit problematical when we're trying to just simply, I mean, we want we want to tell the council that we want to go ahead and have a plan that's going to have zero fatalities.
Yeah.
That's it. And we don't care whether they're bike or ped or motorists or, you know, kids going to school or whatever. We want all of them, zero.
Yeah.
And so the more we mention specific instances, the more it looks like we care more about that than the others. And so that's why I think it could be a lot shorter and sweeter and accomplish what we want to accomplish. But I, as usual, will go along with the wisdom of the group.
As I think about Joe's comment, I look at A, B, and I.
Yeah. So we...
I think, I mean, in my mind, real quick, A, B, and I are the primary ones.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to bring in, well, with the Vision Zero with Eugene, they incorporate a lot of those things, not the climate and energy action stuff, but...
equity.
Equity
should be in there as well to some level, because it's part of one of the nine components.
That's the children, seniors, people of color,
yep.
All that one.
Yep.
So A, B, C.
I.
The schools I put in there too, because well, I guess that would be more an implementation too. Okay. I could agree with that. A, B, C. I. Okay. Any others that you, do we just want to get rid of those others there? Do we need a motion?
I have a question about in saying people of color in that whole list. Are we, I'm not against it, but it just sort of sticks out like, why are we, aren't they people first?
Yeah.
And why would, if you're people of color, why would you be more in danger or whatever?
There are actually studies on that, Corrine, as far as BIPOC, Black, Indigenous people of color, since they are kind of already in a marginalized community, they don't get as good as cars, car insurances, places to go to, poor jobs. So it's the economic impact on BIPOC that really does cause some of the stuff. Because I mean, to me, I do think it's an important statement to put in there and keep in there. We're not trying to single anybody out, but it is a economic aspect of a marginalized community. I mean, we could probably put BIPOC in there instead of people of color.
You know, another way that they've been saying it is communities of concern.
Yeah, that might be better.
You know, which includes all of those.
Would you read that list to me? Because I don't have that handy right now, that all the people that are.
Okay, children, seniors, people of color, people with disabilities, and people in low-income communities face a disproportionate risk of traffic injuries and fatalities. That's a fact.
Yep.
Why don't we do communities of concern then instead of just, to me it's stigmatizing.
Okay.
That's just my take on it.
I'm hearing you. Okay. Does everybody agree to that? Communities of concern?
That could go at the beginning of the list, even. Or at the end. Yeah.
Well, okay, see, yeah. Okay.
Grammatically, it should go in alphabetical order, though, shouldn't it?
What? Joe's the professor.
Yep.
Oh, including, you make it add communities of concern. I was going to say take all those out, communities of concern.
We're talking about just removing peoples of color and adding communities of concern within that.
No, I was saying take out children, seniors, people of color, people with disabilities, and people in low-income communities as communities of concern.
Sure, that would be quicker, neater, and then you're not, you know, labeling somebody as, oh, they can't, you know, they're not careful.
They can't, yeah, I see your point, and I think it's valid. Yeah. You don't want to say that you don't want to imply that something they're doing may make them more likely to be an accident.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah,
which is true of seniors. I am 73. It's true, but
you're a community of concern.
So I can be in the community of concern.
You are a community of, you're in the community of concern.
Yeah.
Okay. And then not local schools to provide safe routes to schools. Not.
I agree with Joe. The rest of this is just fluff for EPAC.
It's not directly related to Vision Zero.
Correct.
Okay.
Component, but it's not directly related.
Okay. But it's part of it, because Vision Zero is the overarching thing where we're going to institute speed reduction policies, strategizing areas in the community of concern where there are more crashes, so we send the cops out there to look at those places more often. You know, it's a big package. This is just the
right. All of that would be included if the council passes this. All of that would be included in developing the proposal.
Right.
But this is just for the council to say we need to do this.
Right.
One of the things I would add as we talk about this for the group to think about is in the actual resolution portion, adding a section, because part of the Vision Zero program is to develop an action plan. And if you add that we resolve to develop an action plan as part of this, is the next steps. That covers a lot of these subcategories that we're removing and ensures that the action plan takes into account kind of that overarching vision of the program itself.
Okay.
Can't you just do that in section one? Just say the council supports efforts by the transportation commissions to develop an action plan to prioritize safety improvements in the transportation system. Again, we get in trouble when we start listing all the people that we're going to do it for, because we always leave somebody out.
Okay.
That would be my suggestion. We're just, you know, they want us to do an action plan.
We got everybody in there.
Well, almost. Yeah. I mean, you don't have skateboards, but they showed up in the earlier one, for example. I don't know.
I can see that. Ashland City Council supports efforts by the City of Ashland's Transportation, Climate Policy, and Climate Conservation Outreach Commission to develop an action plan which prioritizes safety improvements.
Or just prioritize
for all modes.
Yeah.
For all modes of travel.
All modes of transportation.
All modes of travel.
Okay.
Because if you're walking, you're transporting, but you're traveling.
Would the word improvements need to be in there? Because we're not asking for improvements. We want to prioritize safety.
Well, I guess that's what the action plan would do, make improvements. That's good. To prioritize safety for all modes of travel.
So I would suggest changing the order. Do it 3-2-1 instead of 1-2-3 in the resolution.
Okay.
I think that really makes it pretty clear. We're gonna do the vision. We're gonna work with our regional partners to eliminate deaths, and we're gonna have an action plan. Boom, boom, boom.
Okay.
The one other thing I would toss out for the group is I think we're leaving out a commission that has an important job with respect to land use and how things are implemented.
Okay. Okay.
And
we're going to have to get their support, and they don't like us, Scott.
I think in reading our next topic or the next two topics, land use and development are important concepts that I was going to talk about a little bit when I got a chance, but I think it's important to bring them into this conversation in this, and also it's just part of the process as well, to get their support and get them on board with what we're trying to do and accomplish as a community.
Okay. So do you recommend that we go to the Planning Commission to present this to them before we?
Yeah, I recommend, going to the Climate Policy, Climate Outreach, and the Planning Commission as part of this process. And we can use the same materials to present to all three bodies as part of the program. And gain their support. And I think that would, like we talked about before, go a long way to letting council understand that there is support for it. We could even use the Engage Ashland resource and create a survey if we wanted to do something, on a larger scale public input before we even brought it to council, but that's up to the group as well. But I think a minimum, those three additional commissions should weigh in.
Okay.
Three additional? Are those that two?
Planning, climate
planning,
policy.
Planning, climate, and the outreach.
CPC, CCOC, and planning.
Oh, those are two different. Oh, they're two different climate commissions.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care. You can do it any way you want. It seems to me, though, that those commissions, the Planning Commission, they're going to follow their rules no matter what. And we're going to have to come after and clean up the mess when it comes to safety.
As usual.
I don't know if they even have the they might have to change the city ordinances in order to do things like if this particular development is going to increase the traffic load on this street so much that it's a safety issue that they're going to turn it down. I'm not sure that's going to happen. And I shouldn't say this, but I'm a little bit worried that the climate people just want to do this because they think it's going to increase bike and ped use, which will decrease driving. And it's almost the tail wagging the dog. But again, what you folks think you want to do, go ahead.
Duly noted, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we talked about before, there's ancillary benefits, but the Transportation Commission's focus is solely on safety. And that is the driving focus for this moving forward period. If we get ancillary benefits out of it, it's great if there's mode shift, but we're still talking about safety for all modes of travel, period. And I think we want to be cognizant of that when we're having these discussions and making those points to the other commissions.
All right, so next steps, did you take notes on all of the recommendations, Scott?
We have, we're recording and I have some notes. So what I think we should do is update the resolution, bring it back next month, make sure everyone's good with the reworded language, and also frame, like we do with our staff reports for the commission and the council, frame the information in such a way as to move it forward to present to the other commissions as well.
Okay. Does everybody agree to that?
Agreed.
Okay, any more additions or subtractions? Or comments? Okay. Well, that was robust. Oh, I should point out that I also made contact with two of Eugene's transportation planners, and they are more than willing to talk to us about the process that they went through in developing this. So I will make contact with them again with these updates. And I also pointed out to them, I mean, they have, I think, 160 to 180,000 people in their community. So I pointed out this would be like two of their neighborhoods, you know. Anyway, so. But they encouraged me to go forward with the 20 is Plenty and the Vision Zero project. Okay. Okay, our next exciting action-packed item is the TSP scope review. So tonight we're reviewing the proposed scope of the Transportation System Plan update. In January, the scope presented here in your packet for reference has been under discussions with Kittleson, and a revised scope and fee has been developed, which includes Transportation Commission's recommendations for integrating the Climate and Energy Action Plan, the Evacuation Time Estimate Study, and the Vision Zero 20 is Plenty program. Keep in mind that this is step 1.1 in a long process with multiple layers of technical and community input expected.
I had a comment. I really like Gary Schaff's, what would you call it, letter?
Yeah.
And his, the way he took apart their whole thing, I really, and his suggestion to postpone it. I mean, I don't know how that fits in with what we've already committed to, but he made so much sense. Everything he said. Issue I've had with Kittleson at the very first one we went to is it seemed to be boilerplate. Even at one point, they had the wrong city list, you know, in their blah blah about this or that. I don't remember what it was, but I was pretty surprised that they didn't even bother to take, you know, to check their stuff over. I don't know. I didn't really think their stuff was that great, but or that.
And is this in regards to the transit feasibility study or the an earlier update?
The one that I'm talking. Yeah, it was an earlier one. It was the one in 2011 that we were all working on, and it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of surprised when I saw some other place they left off. They left in the thing, didn't take it out, and put Ashland. So to me, it was just boilerplate. They didn't really custom everything. And then the fact that the state or ODOT or the feds are going to be doing a new a new law, a new something.
Rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Rules. Right. Right. Yeah. So and we can do this, why don't we wait for that to get finished?
Scott and I, Scott's given me a bunch of information. And so, Scott, do you want to respond to that or?
Yeah, just a couple things. So in what Gary had put together, and in a way it framed it that Kittleson was making certain decisions as part of a planning process, which it's not accurate to a certain degree. The CAC and TACs, the citizen advisory committees and technical advisory committees that participated in the Jackson County Active Transportation Plan, even Medford's transportation system plan, they're the ones who selected the level of traffic stress designation. That's a policy-related decision that those groups make recommendations on. That's not something that Kittleson said you have to do this or not. That is a policy-related decision, and that is something that would be vetted out as part of this TSP process. Policy-related recommendations would be developed. A lot of that would be informed by the public involvement plan that is developed in the transportation system plan. So those small group meetings, the public open houses, any sort of survey, web information, things we do would help inform making policy related decisions. So I think one of the most important parts associated with this TSP update is, I believe it's task number two really, and that's setting the policies and goals and strategies. And that involves the information from the Climate Energy Action Plan and integrating that into the TSP. That involves the information from the Evacuation Time Estimate Study and involving that in the TSP. And really driving that section drives the rest of the TSP development itself, where you start to look at the alternatives and the best alternatives for transportation improvements across all modes moving forward. With respect to the TPR, you know, Gary said that we're looking Division of Land Conservation and Development is looking at having that approved at the state early next year. Now, based on our schedule that we're looking at, you know, we wouldn't even issue essentially notice to proceed on the project till the end of July into August. And those first few months are all about data gathering, review, and starting that public outreach process and looking at those goals and strategies and policies. So we would know a lot more on the TPR change moving forward, and we wouldn't be developing anything as part of the next activities until we really knew what that TPR change was going to be. And I don't think, based on what I read in Gary's email, that our TSP would be anything but extremely compliant with updates to the TPR based on the direction that it's headed, specifically knowing that our 2012 TSP is, you know, was already a high-level multimodal plan developed. And so it's just building on that moving forward. And kind of that was my general thought that I shared with Linda after I read Gary's email.
And I also want to point out that Kittleson, when the RFP went out, the request for proposal went out, Kittleson was the only one that even applied for the job, even though Scott made a particular outreach with other consultants to apply for it. So it's not like they're the only game in town, but they're the only one that actually responded to working with us on the TSP update. And they do have, they've had a lot of experience working with the Medford project. And were they also involved with the active transportation active?
Correct.
Thing, so. Yes, Mark?
So on our packet we got today says that Sections within the document have been highlighted showing changes and additions to the attachment for us. Well, I do not see any highlights in any part of the packet, so I'm trying to figure out what highlights I'm supposed to be looking for.
I wonder if that was on my old copy. So this is the scope that
first
was amended and recommended some changes out of our discussion last year. And so I just want to let the group know too, I received another updated scope yesterday that includes a couple more pieces of information. It actually includes the evacuation time estimate information and a couple other components. It also switches and provides virtual meetings and in-person meetings for all of them, which, you know, we didn't have originally. And so it opens up that opportunity. And there's another component that I'll throw out there that for the group, I talked to Stu Green yesterday, and he has been speaking with a representative of ODOT, and I forget her title, Stephanie, but there is funding available to support a bike share study that can be added to the TSP and vetted through a sub-consultant. And that bike share study can look at only Ashland, or it can look at the region itself. And one of the things Stu was doing is, after he sent me and we talked about that, he was meeting with RVTD to talk about maybe joining forces with RVTD on this bike share study and potentially including it in our TSP if we can get funding for it, and having it as a regional study, like I said, in conjunction with RVTD. So that's something that I would support. I think Stu supports it.
That sounds great.
And I think in the conversations that we'll have behind the scenes leading up to next month's discussion with this group, I think we'll have a little bit more information to bring forward regarding how that can work into the scope as part of this TSP update, if the group is interested in us chasing that down.
Well, personally, I think that's great. The more regional, data and collaboration we can get, the better.
So I'm going to pull one out of Joe's hat. TAC has several meetings and sessions and stuff like that, and there's still only one, and it's actually labeled as number one, Transportation Commission Work Session Number One. If that's the only thing that's going to be on there is one, number one, why would there be any other work sessions besides number one? There shouldn't be number one in there. So that's alluding to we're going to have more than one work session. And of course, it looks like TAC again gets all the power. And this is again why we'll vote no on it. So is Kittleson going to give us 1,000 hours worth of work?
I don't know how many hours. I'd have to go back and look at what they project.
No, starting at normal weight for stuff like this is $2,225 an hour. So if you look at the total, it's 1,000 hours. To go off of Corinne's original thing, their cookie cutter, I realize they're the only person who replied to the solicitation, but I still don't agree with it.
Well, there you have it. I'm aghast.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to mention a couple of comments in here about 2.4 draft tech memo number 2, that we go to evaluation criteria, including social benefit, and change that disadvantaged and minority groups to communities of concern. That's what I had. Okay.
My general reaction to Gary Schaaf's letter was, at first I said, yeah, these are points we'll take it. And then I started thinking, well, what are our options? I think it is true that it's kind of a boilerplate, not a proposal, but a scope that in itself doesn't respond to the direction that Ashland obviously wants to move. There's nothing in this document that wouldn't preclude increasing our VMTs by 30% in 10 years. It doesn't really seem to conform to the way we want to go. But looking at the glass half full rather than half empty, I don't see anything in the document that would preclude us from moving in the direction we want to go. That if we have the right input and the right direction and a consensus among all the stakeholders that this is where we want to go, I don't think there's anything in this scope that would stop us from doing it. And so then it's more like, do we push this off again or do we get moving? And my feeling is we need to get moving. We put this off long enough. We need to get stakeholders involved. We need to get things moving. And I hate to see, okay, let's start from square one again. Because I think what Scott was saying, reading between the lines, is that, yeah, the things that are going to happen next year on land use and planning will have an impact, but that doesn't mean we have to stop and start all over. We can incorporate them as we go.
Especially with the beginning, is that it is data, we are doing data collection.
And I think
it's not even going to start the meetings and everything. The CAC hasn't been, you know,
that's a good point.
Not the TAC has not been approved. So like I said at the beginning, this is the long haul. This is step one, you know.
Yeah, Bruce has a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to build on Bruce's point, I'll say that's why the policy discussion is very important, because that's where you get to setting that foundation of the direction you want to go as a community overall, which builds the rest of the TSP up. And to Mark's point, correct me if I'm wrong a little bit, but I recollect that we had this conversation the last go around about the TC, but one of the things that this group agreed to is as part of the process that the TC would manage and facilitate the small group meetings as part of that to ensure that those outcomes were captured and encompassed into tasks moving forward.
That sounds right.
That sounds familiar.
That's what I remember too.
Mark, yeah.
And there's nothing that
still gives TAC more power than our commission does. And that's the part that Joe is upset with. And I agree with Joe. So if we're going to do a TSP and we're the last people getting talked to about it, it kind of seems kind of counterintuitive. Again, was somebody that said the tail wagging the dog?
So I think we can set it up in a way the same with the TAC and the CAC and the TC as part of that process functionally and build that in. I have to take a step back and look at it, you know, because I know we've talked about this, but I know there's a way functionally, because the Planning Commission will probably say the same thing, you know, when we get to that point is, you know, because the last time it was only the TC and the Planning Commission were only partook in the development of the document itself. And so now they're relegated to just a member on the TAC. And so I think there's a way to weave that in there, but I want to, between now and the next meeting, take a step back and think about how that structure could work as part of this process and scope.
Okay, will you be talking to Matt about that? Matt is the project chair.
So I appreciate Mark's comments, and I've been trying desperately to find where it says which groups are consulted. I see plenty of city council and planning commission. I can't find the transportation commission on here, and maybe I'm just looking in the wrong place. So maybe Mark can help me.
I see transportation commission really only having one meeting, and that's basically it. It talks about us in section 1. Something about us being part of the CAC, but other than that, there really is no other thing in there. We have one meeting on section 8, I think it is.
8.
So in the committee rosters, we're not in the TAC.
So we're only on CAC. And then 8.2 is the Transportation Commission work session number 1. That's the next time we're really mentioned in the entire document.
You know, I have to go back and look at the updated scope because I thought,
the one that he just sent out?
Yeah, because that doesn't seem correct.
This one says December 16, 2019.
Yeah.
That's pretty old. That's
Might have included the one that wasn't fully amended after our couple of discussions. I might have grabbed the wrong date one.
Well, I hope we've done something since a year ago, a year and a half ago.
Yeah, because we talked about this in 2 meetings last year, and it was changes were made a couple times in January and February, I believe it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Scott, are you going to send out the right one?
Yeah, I'll track that down.
Okay.
So I can get off the edge and not fall off the cliff.
I'll get the updated one that Matt sent, plus I'll update it with some comments that we've got through today, and then we'll figure out the schedule of meetings and who's involved in the meetings and the management of the meetings themselves, because that wasn't clear, as we talked about before, that the small groups would be run through the TC as well.
But that doesn't really help if when we get down to the final thing, because that's,
yeah,
you know, they can accept or reject any of the suggestions from the citizens. And it just seems odd if we're the group that's supposed to approve this, and yet we don't have that much time, why don't we get to meet with the city council and the planning commission? It doesn't make sense.
And, you know, I thought we went over that.
Well, this is the wrong document. So we'll all get calm and just move on.
Yeah, let's do that.
We can't comment on the document if it's the wrong document.
And I just want to make sure in the evaluation that the triple bottom line is in there: environment, equity, and economy. So I guess we'll move on. Scott's going to send that stuff out way before the next meeting, because it takes a lot of time to get through these things.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank Gary for presenting that letter to us as well. Okay. Any other comments before we move on to yet another robust discussion, I think, somewhere? What are we on now?
The SEEP.
The Climate and Energy Action Plan, SEEP, Implementation Plan. And as I mentioned, I do foresee a spot for Bruce on the Climate Policy Commission. He can move right in there.
We'll see.
So does anybody want to start discussion about this? Do we want to, I'm assuming we all want to be involved with the update of the seat plan, since we're integrating it with the transportation system plan. Is that correct?
So,
Joe?
So my only question is, what's the process? I mean, they've got this wonderful plan that they figured out how we should redesign our transportation system, and they're bringing it to us. What do we do with it? And what, you know, is it, are we just supposed to consider it as part of the TSP update? Are we supposed to sit back and let them take this directly to council so council can decide to do all this stuff without our input? I don't know. And I'd like to understand what we're doing.
Okay.
And I apologize if Scott spelled it all out in his tech memo, but.
No, I think what is happening is the Climate Policy Commission is proceeding to do an update of the Climate and Energy Action Plan. And this document, I believe, was produced, this part of the plan, this part of the update, was produced by Gary. And I, I don't even know if it went to the Climate Policy Commission yet or not, because they've got other priorities that they're dealing with in regards to the plan for electrification and trying to reduce our consumption of fossil gas through town. So I don't know, Scott, do you have any information about it?
I don't know. This was a request from them to comment on the document that's in the packet. I've read through it a couple times, and I have a couple just generalized statements, because part of the documentation that I've read really heavily relies on land use planning as part of it, and not so much specific to transportation related components or infrastructure. It has a lot to do with land use, a little bit to do with transit. There are components that overlap, with safety and fossil fuel reduction, fleet changes, vehicular changes, household vehicular reductions, and things of that nature to meet the 2050 climate goals. I think where it really hits on the TSP and the Transportation Commission is enhancing sidewalk and bike facilities in the network to facilitate so transit, bike, and pedestrian facilities to facilitate mode shift away from vehicular trips is really what they're looking at, is how I kind of read this specific to the Transportation Commission transportation plan is, what can we do to help facilitate mode shift?
I know that's what's in it, Scott, but I'm not quite sure what we're supposed to do about it and how it fits into our activities. I have to, again, being the curmudgeon on the group, we've had a lot of times when different groups have come and made transportation plans, and suddenly, they're at council before we've even seen them. Linda's telling me that this wasn't even the SEEP committee, but some one individual wrote this draft. So I'm a little bit confused about what we're doing and why we're supposed to be doing it. Time reading it and figuring out what my comments are about it.
I think one thing, that's fundamental to providing comments as far as the seat plan is their table 9 in the document, which is the land use and transportation strategies. I think that would be where you would make fundamental comments on those strategies, and if they play a role anymore with respect to transportation moving forward as far as what the group thinks. I can probably bring that up real quick.
Yeah, please do, because I'm not finding it. Because I thought I was just thinking that all the land use issues are more pertinent to the planning commission than us.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about the Croman Mill site development plan, RVTD, and all that, you know, and really.
So I think looking at this table, implement bicycle and pedestrian friendly actions in the TSP, and that would translate to the TSP update. Explore opportunities to convert shared streets where appropriate. Gas tax that Bruce has mentioned. And I think the TSP update should probably look at EV charging as part of one of the components of it. And carpool van parking, I think, kind of ties in potentially with work with RVTD to implement climate friendly transit and evaluate feasibility of local transit options. So I think my first thing would be, are these strategies and subsequent actions associated with them appropriate, and should they be changed based on where we are right now and where we're headed moving forward?
I was going to destroy this document, so I'll have a little fun. The strategies, in my opinion, are pretty much off base. So the SEEP should be calling themselves, we do not want vehicles on the road, we only want bicycles and pedestrians. They keep talking about VMT. Now, the VMT reduction of 50% will lower GHG by 50%. That might be true today, but tomorrow it won't be true. When I get my Ford Lightning pickup truck in 2 years, that'll be 2023. What happens then? Do you want me to reduce my vehicle miles traveled? I'm now driving an all-electric vehicle. Bruce should be very happy with me for that one, because I am putting my order in for an F-150 Lightning. But my point is to this, if you look at all their strategies of stuff they're supposed to be reducing or doing, it doesn't do anything or talk about the upcoming epidemic we're going to have of EVs everywhere. It is now the new mainstream. So I think when you look at strategy 4, reduce miles MDT and auto ownership, that's now not a valid point to make. Because if you're going to talk about it, the VMT, you're talking about how we get cars off the road, some more pedestrians and bikes. Well, if everybody goes as EV, you don't need to worry about vehicles miles traveled because there won't be any carbon emissions. So this is a very, and then putting a 5-cent gas tax. Okay, I somewhat agree to it, but the other part of the strategy is this. We're going to go after the marginalized communities then who can't afford an EV. EVs aren't cheap. Yes, there's all kinds of plans and stuff for them. But what am I going to do to the poor guy driving the school bus by my house? Make him pay 5 cents more per gallon when he can barely afford to get across town in the thing? You know, so there's strategies all the way through this I really disagree with. As far as if you look at page 18 and 19. So that's all predicated upon, which one are you on? I can't see. It's all predicated on we're still using petrol burning fossil fuel vehicles. That is going away quicker than we can say anything. So if you keep going down a little bit farther, Scott, you'll see next page. You can see right there, and even policy 3.4. But nowhere in here is it talking about more EVs coming into play. We talk about lowering the miles traveled, raising gas prices, electric only parking. Well, that's basically where we're going to anyway. So we don't need necessarily these policies and strategies to tell us to do it. I think they need to be changed. That's just my 2 cents worth. Because to me, the document is about how to ride and bike. I mean, how to bike and walk, nothing more. I have a lot more I could destroy it on, but I realize somebody spent a lot of hard work on it, and I appreciate you.
I hate to do piling on, but I can go mark one further. If we look at figure four, which is on page 7 of the plan, and I believe it's it's page 69 of the PDF. The idea, part of this is a no-brainer. Obviously, if you're walking or biking, you're not producing carbon emissions. But the other part is to get people onto transit. And if you look at the carbon intensity of travel, your average local bus comes in at number 4 of the worst, above small cars and electric cars and hybrid cars. So obviously, and this is a personal disappointment, is that RVTD is not moving as fast as they should be to both scale their fleet to demand and to get it electrified. So if we want to cut carbon emissions, we got to, and if transit is supposed to be an alternative, we've got to start cutting the carbon emissions from transit as well.
Yeah.
So there's lots of ways to do it.
And I would make the same recommendation to the Climate Policy Commission that they need to start going to RVTD to get them to change their 2040 plan, get off CNG and start electrifying, you know. And with the Ashland Connector, it could be electrified now. So
right, yeah. I mean, the Ashland Connector pointed in the right direction. But yeah. I look at their 2040 plan and I don't see that really accelerating. I see it as sort of like, yeah, maybe, maybe not. They really need to move in that direction.
Well.
And is really owning a car a prerequisite in Ashland?
Pardon me?
I mean, is owning a car really a prerequisite in Ashland? Because they make that point several times in this as well, that Ashland, you have to have a car to live here. Well, Ms. Holly earlier said that she doesn't own a car for 21 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we're taking a sledgehammer to anybody who drives an automobile, and whether it be a Tesla or an old school original Hummer, you're still getting hit with the same sledgehammer. This doesn't really make me feel warm and fuzzy or bring me together. How about that?
I suppose at the risk of further piling on, I think I tend to agree. It feels like the main strategy is you make it harder and harder to drive a car. The main strategy to do that appears to be getting rid of parking downtown. If I want to drive downtown in my electric car, I might not find a parking place. So that means I don't go downtown. So it's going to be a difficult road to hoe, I think. Not everybody in Ashland. Somewhere we've got to show that the people who live in Ashland are actually going to be willing to bike and ped. And speaking as an old geezer who lives up the hill, I'm unlikely to ride a bike downtown. Even if you made Siskiyou Boulevard as safe as possible with a protected bike lane, I'm not likely to use it because after a full day of shopping downtown, I can't make it up the hill in my bike. Now I might need an electric e-bike, but it's, you know, that is kind of difficult. And I think, you know, so far parking has been the third rail downtown. I don't know how we're going to get around that. Redesigning the plaza and getting rid of half the parking spaces on the plaza may not help. So it's a bit of a challenge to figure out how this is going to work. But I understand. Give me just a second, Corrine.
Sure.
You know, transportation is, if we have any low-hanging fruit, transportation is it. For reducing emissions. And so that's where they have to focus. The other concern that I have is that with 2/3 of the employees in Ashland, based upon older data, commuting from somewhere else, we've got to figure out how that factors in. Because if we all go to electric cars or walking and biking, and all the people who are coming into work drive their F-150 diesel pickup trucks or whatever, it's not going to do that much for emissions.
Right.
You kind of said what I was going to say.
but I'm not going to ride a bike, and I don't know if I can afford an electric car. But, yeah, so there's people that aren't able to, that need cars. They have to have a car to get.
Can I interrupt to say that my electric car, the one I drive, if I qualified for charge ahead rebate, would have cost me $6,500. So, yes, you can afford an electric car. It'll take you anywhere in the valley.
Sorry about that.
But I come back to what are we doing? What are we supposed to do here?
So I have a bunch of comments from the group that I'd like to do is kind of bundle them into a bullet point list and bring it back as far as how we would like to respond to this. The other thing that, as I read this, and it's mentioned very briefly in there, is one of the things that we fail at all the time is education.
Yeah.
And educating people about these things. And I think one of them was about the bike and the fearless versus the concerned and interested. And it says, kids of parents who are in the fearless category, tend to evolve into that category where kids of parents who are concerned or just say no will never evolve into, wanting to change the mode and ride a bike. And I don't know if a couple of you might remember when Egon was here a few years ago talking about his bicycle education safety class. One of the things that he said is that he could not convince the principal, I believe it was of Bellevue, to participate in the class because he or she was opposed and didn't think that kids should be riding anywhere because it was unsafe, even if they received safety training in this class to make them more aware to ride on the system. And so I think, one of the components of transportation is in an element is educating people.
Yeah.
And how does that get woven into kind of one of these kind of the strategies that benefit the community for GH or, meeting target goals and reductions?
And safety.
Yeah.
That's when Tackalo was here, it's the four E's, right? You need to educate people, and if you just have enforcement for reducing speeds, without education, it goes nowhere. So maybe that's all part of it, is that we need to be educated to, our auto-centric car culture and try to see a different way.
We just had an unfortunately a really good learning experience for my grandkids who are 14 and 10 with the accident that just happened in Medford. He had a 14-year-old kid on a bicycle who didn't follow the laws, was trying to do something, ran into a vehicle driven by a 16-year-old kid, and that 14-year-old kid, as we all know, is no longer with us.
Yeah.
And so, I had to use that as a training thing for my grandkids so they understand.
Right.
So in this case there, that's a bicycle education. If the child maybe had learned more, I'm not trying to make light of a child's death anyway, shape or form, so everybody understands that. But that was a good learning experience, unfortunately, for my grandkids, but we need that education, like you're saying, Linda, more of it.
Yeah. And at the school level, at schools, That's where you get, that's where it starts.
And this makes me think of a scope item in the TSP is what are good educational components that we can use to push out there.
Right.
And how do we create that outreach connection? One of the school things is having a Safe Routes to School coordinator,
right.
and having someone who is that communication specialist and does that those outreaches to the parents and the kids and does trainings and things like that.
So since Derek isn't here, I will say my usual mantra about getting bikes through downtown. And that doesn't seem to be a major thrust of this, although, you know, it can fit in there. But you can redesign the plaza all you want to, but if people are still afraid to get their bike into the plaza, it's not going to help reduce driving and increase biking. I think that's a serious issue that we have to face if we want to do this, if we want to get more people biking and get more people biking to downtown. Now, if we want to get people to bike to school instead of having their parents drive them, then there's a lot we can do other places besides downtown. But if we want to focus on the downtown, we have to do something about getting bikes safely through downtown for more than the brave.
Right.
And I don't, and it's going to be a catch 22 kind of thing, chicken or the egg. If people don't feel safe, they're not going to ride. And if they don't ride, it's not going to look like there's any demand for people to ride. But somehow we just have to take that bull by the horns and to use lots of idioms and just, do something about that. And I think that should be one of the highest priorities of everybody, including the seat. Because if we don't do that, it doesn't help to have bike racks right. all over the place if only the brave people can use them and all the rest of the citizens still have to drive because they don't feel safe.
Well, it's also to educate people that there are safe ways to travel by bike through town, and you know, beyond just your perception of it. So it's to educate you as to how you can get through town safely in a bike.
To Joe's self-fulfilling prophecy of if it's not safe, people don't come, so you don't think that you need it for people. It's the same thing with speed. You know, you have a 27 mile an hour, 85th percentile speed. Well, you know, you can't lower it because it's too close to 25 miles an hour. So you don't do any measures to try to lower it through traffic calming because it's too close. So you kind of get stuck. And that's why the 20 is Plenty program or bicycle boulevards, you know, give you that ability to do that. To lower it. And then it comes to the education to educate people that that's really an appropriate speed to travel on a residential road, and, you know, for yourself and your family. And I think Councilor Hyatt mentioned this at the first meeting that we talked about it, is, you know, a parent going, I'm all in, you know, when I have to look at, you know, the safety of my kids out there. And so hopefully we get into that education and messaging and how to get that across. Like we talked about earlier, that you know, it's not going to take you 20 minutes longer because the speed limit is 20 miles an hour instead of 25. You know, we're talking an infinitesimal
second
change in your schedule.
And since the Transportation Commission is taking back the downtown, we should definitely push through with Joe's idea for making that a priority.
We are taking it back?
Okay. Revitalized downtown's not coming back. We're going to do it all.
I think there's going to be some components in the TSP update that will have to be brought forward, period.
Okay, well, I'll be glad to help you, Linda, with how to facilitate a meeting full of mad citizens.
Okay. You know, I'm doing it online every day, I tell you. If that darn road diet keeps coming up and it drives me nuts. Okay. So So you're going to bring back some bullet points. Is that what we're going to do? You know, and I would suggest if anybody wants to make comments to Gary or the CPC, just shoot them out there.
Yeah, I'll generate what I call my musings and a format, and I'll bring it back next month. I'll have a bunch of musings on what we think, and, you know, specifically that some of this is not for the Transportation Commission to comment on. It should be directed at the Planning Commission as well.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
And RVPD itself.
Yep.
Because we're not the transit.
I make one suggestion for you, Scott. On page 20, so 82 of 108 on our PDF, it has expected outcomes. That's the one that really has me boggled, because it's very similar to what Joe brought up on the other stuff. Because it says reduce reliance upon single occupant motor vehicles, and then it says increase mode choice for all Ashlanders. So the expected outcomes, I might have it changed. If you look down, I think at number 8, Officer McLennan would be really stoked about that one.
Yeah.
So, my thing would be...
He's going to have his hands full. We're going to have to get him on another electric motorcycle.
Because you look at that whole section from there down, and I think it goes all the way to 4.3, I think, has to do with us. I would just have them maybe revisit that.
You know, and with the implementation strategy, there are tons of things that they've suggested start now. And anyway, okay, are you guys happy about that now? That we're going to put it off till the next meeting, or I think we're good.
Yeah, Linda said, if you have anything else you want to send to me to include in my musings list for the group, send it my way, and I'll put together a package.
Okay. So we went to Vision Zero to Net Zero with Zero. So I'm gonna bring up this climate resilient Ashland integrated approach that Tanya Graham has asked several commission chairs and stuff to look at, and to see if we want to contribute to that program, or if you have interest in developing that program. I don't know if you guys looked at it. We can't make any decisions on it tonight, but I thought I would just bring it up as something to look at and get your input on it.
Let me stop sharing so we can all see each other.
There we go. Or you could put it up too.
Yeah.
It's basically an annual campaign that she's trying to get really door knockers out there talking about how to, you know, wildfire things that you can do, you know, all the process that the Fire Adapted Ashland stuff is going through, and making it a monthly kind of program so that education, transparency, what we can do, what we can't do, what you should be doing, that kind of thing. And the knocking on doors thing, I think, was brought out with by the Wildfire Safety Commission. The best way to get people to respond to doing stuff in their neighborhoods to make them more wildfire adapted is by talking to people. And I think that there was a program started, and Paula, I don't know if you know anything about this, but where volunteers, they're having a volunteer group trained to be able to determine what fire hazards you have on your property, on your lot, to get them to be able to go out and do an individual assessments of your property.
I think you covered it there, Linda. The only other add-on I would put there is about a year and a half ago, the Ashland Fire Department came through the entire city and did just that.
Right.
So every home has a code on the Ashland Fire, or the FireWise Ashland, and you can check the steps and your risk level. And then clearly that's a dynamic type of a program because things change. And so those volunteers were one of the ways to solve, to keep that going, and one-on-one education.
To do one-on-one, and which it was, Katie Gibble now is the coordinator of that. And she does go out to individual people who request those, you know, recommendations. She goes out there.
Dynamo.
Yes. Yep. And she's been very successful in talking to a whole lot of people, but there's 8,000 households, more than that, in town. Mm-hmm. And it would be great if we did have that volunteer force to be able to get everybody.
So I'm going to bring out my equitability hat.
Yep.
So we're doing most of this for 1,100 homes. So I'm wondering where these 1,100 high-risk homes are at. My guess is those 1,100 high-risk homes are talking about for this whole thing, or above the boulevard.
Yeah.
My guess is their average price per square foot is probably extremely high. I don't think we're talking about apartment complex or low-income housing.
No.
So to me, some of this looks like we're going to protect the rich. When I see some of this, when I look at where the stuff is at, I see it as us protecting the rich. So I see it as I don't see it as equitable. Are they going to come to my house, your house, Linda, which we're pretty much safe from any fire thing, and talk to us about?
Actually, that's,
well,
there are some exceptions. Linda and I are exceptions. Oak Street neighborhood is high risk because of the open space that's directly east. We're in the direct line of those driveway east winds.
Yeah.
In other words, if the Alameda fire started, go ahead.
I won't be the fire start on my street.
I just had 7 Italian cypress 20 feet tall removed so that they won't go up as Roman candles. And that was a big expense, and I could afford it. But if somebody else was, you know, there are a lot of people in the neighborhood that have fire-prone trees that would not be able to get them removed. So that's part of trying to get incentive programs to get that stuff done.
Yeah, Bruce,
I mean, the 1,100 households, mm-hmm. 1,100 with it, that it's being funded by a federal grant or a state grant? State grant, I think. That's a separate program to the one that I was talking about. But
it does look like we're trying to protect one side of the boulevard.
By and large,
that's where the greatest fire danger.
80% right, the 20%, depending on where you are, relation to those east winds, are very high risk.
Yeah, because I lived in Riverwalk and we were high risk down there because of the big giant field next to North Mountain Park. So that field goes right up the back of his house in your place.
Yeah.
But my point is, anyway. I think still a valid point that this does look like we're trying to protect only the people above the boulder.
Yeah.
So fortunately, we're not the Wildfire Commission. We're the Transportation Commission. So I'm trying to figure out where we would fit into this, because I mean, it seems like the Wildfire Commission has a lot to help to talk to people about.
Yes.
As does the SEEP, to talk about general issues of you know, energy reduction and greenhouse gas reduction. Transportation, I would see us as being really ancillary to the SEEP in this sort of thing, because if we go to neighborhoods and talk about the transportation system, we're just as likely to get, you know, people drive too fast on our street, or why isn't there more parking downtown? And that loses the message of climate resiliency, I think. So I don't quite see how we fit into this as well as some of these other commissions do.
I think Councillor Graham was just trying to pull us all in.
Yeah.
You know, boots on the ground kind of thing. You know, we're all involved with educating people. Maybe we could do that, you know, put in the evacuation plan or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that might be one of the things. That's a good point. I would say one of the things you could take advantage of is getting people to be involved in the transportation system plan update and providing comments as part of education as you move forward. The other thing is talking about the ETE stuff. And one of the things that we'll be bringing forward, as we talked about, is the zones and know your zone and know your routes out of your zone.
Right.
And one of the things that Katie Gibble mentioned is in certain locations, every resident has a fridge magnet that's on their fridge that provides kind of that general information. So I think there's some components that could be from the transportation system worked in here, but I do agree with Joe, it's pretty ancillary to the primary overarching SEEP goals, neutral by 50, and then wildfire mitigation.
Yeah. Okay, any other comments? And anybody wanna contribute anything to the integrated approach with climate resilient Ashland, or I'll just, no, okay. So I may bring it up again later when I get more information.
Linda, can I make one suggestion on that? Sure. I would be very interested to see it redone. My problem with it is this, as well as it's not professionally written, so it's hard to follow. So if we can get it presented in a more professional manner, and I'm not knocking anybody's writing skills or critiquing anything, it makes it a little bit easier to follow and understand.
Okay.
And you know me, I'll be boots on the ground. Anytime.
Yeah, it's kind of just the beginnings of trying to get something together so that people are educated as to what they can do and what they can't do. Or what they should do, what they can do and what they should do. Okay, Scott, do you want to talk about slurry seal or it was already brought up in the council packet, I think, in the last thing. We got a lot of complaints from people on social media that their dogs were stepping in it and, bringing in tar all over on the soles of their feet on their carpets and stuff. So,
yeah, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah. Yeah. What I put in your packet is kind of what we put on the website. And, you know, first and foremost, this isn't something brand new that just popped out. The city's been doing this for a long, long time. And it's part of our pavement maintenance strategy. It is a very effective pavement maintenance strategy for low volume residential roads to extend the life of the pavement. I think people's initial concern is they see a kind of the exposed aggregate and the shedding of that exposed aggregate over the first week of its application. And that exposed aggregate and that shedding goes away. Our guys have been sweeping and have swept each of those roads once a week afterwards to pick up that exposed aggregate. And once traffic hits those roads a little bit too, that, you know, what I would call sharpness, surface sharpness goes away as well. And so what we've done to a lot of the people who have had primary issues with it from the look standpoint and the aggregate standpoint is pointed them to roads that have been slurry sealed in the last go around so they can see what the actual final finish looks like, not just week one's finish and application. It's dramatically different. And, you know, the cost to do this per square foot versus having to repave a road is about a fourth of the cost. And so, like I said, it's a very effective way to manage pavement. It's only for us on the low volume residential roads.
Well, let's see, my phone started ringing, so did Linda's, and they got complaints about why is the slurry still in the middle of the gutter? Why is it on the concrete? Why is it here? Why is it there? And also, why is it the city of Ashland cannot put the right dates to go with the right day of the week? You can't have signs up that says street closed Friday, 4/22, when actually the 23rd would have been the Friday. You can't have signs like that around town. So it didn't make us look so professional, by the way, Mr. Fleury.
Yeah, and
it was contracted out. It wasn't the city's fault. It was contracted out.
So. Yeah, the contractor is supposed to notice, and there were some, you know, scheduling changes based on the weather. And so that shifted things where it should have been initially applied. They had weather-related issues over a couple of days with the temperature base, and so they had to shift some of the projects, which had a trickle-down effect in certain areas, which impacted the schedule. You know, having done this for the last decade, this is the first time we've received any sort of complaints and about the visual appearance of it. But the other one that we've never had before was trash pickup day. And so some of these slurry seals hit on trash pickup day and people were not appreciative of the work being done on trash pickup day. And I believe we had an agreement and alteration of routing with Recology in place, but it kind of got thrown off because some of the schedules were impacted because of the weather.
Oh.
And so next time we'll be more in alignment with Recology as well, associated with the street list and the trash pickup day, to make sure that the schedule of activities has enough float in it to where we have a weather delay, it still won't impact trash pickup.
How much was this conveyed to people before the slurry seal?
I believe they get door hangers and postcards like a week or two in advance, and a door hanger the week of, and then no parking signs go out.
Did you have?
So I can guarantee you that Paul didn't happen.
Paul's neighborhood was affected. You didn't get it. You didn't get that stuff.
We got it the night before. And then we only have one road in, one road out of my neighborhood. And we weren't even made aware that that road was being done. So we were all stuck. And it was interesting that morning when everything got shut down. But you make the most of it. Sometimes things aren't convenient and you figure it out and you put on your big girl pants and you move on. So I get that there were some hiccups this time, Scott. I have no doubt you're going to take the learnings from them and make it happen next time. But the sweepers have been by, just like you said. And yeah, my kid didn't track anything in because the information on the sheet said, don't do this, this, and this. So if you took the time to read it, you knew that. But otherwise, yeah, it was just, you know, it was all right. We figure it out.
And I thought they had scheduled to do Nevada half and half. So,
but they did schedule it that way. They did not do it that way.
Implement it that way. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was fun. But as I said, we adjust, we learn. It's all good.
Yeah. And we can apologize to all those people that were sorely affected by it. And we apologize.
Well, I will say one day's worth of aggravation is a lot less than us being out there for multiple weeks, completely ripping up the road and overlaying it. No one wants to hear those backup alarms for 8 hours a day for multiple weeks. So this is a little bit better of a solution as well.
Yeah. At much greater expense as well, too. So
correct.
We're all cognizant of our need to cut expenses. So I think that's it. If anybody else has any other comment?
I have a question about the parking rules downtown. Someone complained that the Diamond parking people are giving tickets. If you park more than, I don't remember all the details, I didn't write them down, but there's a certain amount of time that you can park in on one side of the block, and if you leave and you come back and you find a place on that same side of the block, you get a ticket. You mm-hmm. have to move to the other side. When did that happen? I don't remember us ever talking about that.
About?
It's A Street by the, remember where they came down and wanted the two-hour parking signs by the hardware store and by the co-op and all that?
Yeah.
That's where the complaints are coming from, is right there, because they put the new signs up that say you can only park here for 2 hours and 24 hours on this section. And so now they have the signs up for enforcement.
Okay.
That block space rule has been in the code forever.
12 years.
Oh, okay. But people didn't know about it, apparently. Maybe the sign wasn't up when they were complaining.
Well,
is there a parking garage down there?
No.
No,
they were saying something about a parking garage.
Hmm. Well, there is one downtown, not on A Street.
Okay, but it's only
it has the same
that rule.
No, I don't think so. We're all block parking, right?
Yeah, anywhere that is signed parking is block-based parking. We're in a process, and we're going to eventually change out the rest of the signs downtown to make it more clear that that rule does exist for people. We just did A Street because it was kind of that first go-run about getting the sign that conveyed that message. So we still have to work through the process of changing the rest of the signs downtown to that block-based rule.
And it still applies to the parking garage, too?
The parking garage is
paid parking.
Paid parking and time parking. So what we did in the parking garage recently is we switched it to pay to park or pay by phone automated app parking with one pay machine that only takes credit cards. So you can use an app to pay for parking, or you can pay by credit card. The parking structure. So it changed a little bit from what it was previously.
But the block thing doesn't apply there?
No, not in the parking structure.
Okay.
You can park there all day.
So, Scott, my only question for you tonight is...
Where is it? Where is the parking structure?
Hargadine. It's at the corner of Hargadine and 2nd.
Right behind the
Okay, way up.
Right behind the Thomas Theater.
Okay, way up there. Okay.
Scott, are we going to get a crosswalk ever on North Main?
No.
I had enough for three kids the other day.
He almost got away with it.
I
personally walked three kids across the street the other day, and so I was going to bring it up. We got to do something.
Next month I will show you the plans. I have over the last couple of weeks had a couple of meetings with ODOT. The project I believe is going to bid in September, and we are looking at multiple crosswalks on Main.
Checks in the mail.
Yeah, we've been multiple coordinating Scott. With ODOT.
Multiple.
So.
How many is multiple?
Van Ness and nursery, fully marked. And then there will be other drop ramps, but with crossings, but they won't be fully marked at the other intersection locations. We're looking at the fully marked ones at Nursery and Van Ness, like we had discussed earlier.
By fully
so are
marked,
both
you
of
mean
those
with flashers?
Yeah.
Flashers at Van Ness we're pushing for, and I think ODOT's agreed to that. We came up with the
Yay.
Plan yesterday, and Nursery, no. It would be fully marked, though, with stop here for pedestrians, the advance warning sign, and the stop bar, like you see on Siskiyou Boulevard. But the flasher would be at Van Ness.
Excellent. Good question, Mark.
And the others are going to have no stop bar, but the painted walk across the street, or what?
No painted walk across the street, just the drop ramps right now.
Okay. So that's a good opportunity for education. Educate all those two-thirds of people who probably don't live in Ashland who are driving down Main Street. The chair and vice chair of the Transportation Commission are going to hear a lot when those go in. So be sorry what you wish for, Mark. But that's going to be it's going to need a real education, because people will want to cross every one of those places, especially if you teach pedestrians that it's a crosswalk, whether it's marked or not, at any intersection, and you don't teach drivers to watch out for that. Talk about Vision Zero.
What does a drop ramp look like? What does a drop ramp look like?
It's the truncated dome ramps, Corrine.
Oh, okay, like a wheelchair ramp.
Correct.
Okay, and they'll just shoot out across the street towards the next one.
Yes, they'll align with the opposite corner connection.
So is there a median there that it has to cut through?
At Van Ness, there'll be a median.
Yeah. Yeah, but not everywhere.
Not everywhere.
There will be?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It'll be a mountable median. It won't
okay.
be a fixed median. It'll be a mountable.
We're not going to be limiting the ability to get out of town.
No, and that's one of the discussions we had, is ensuring that median is mountable, which drove a change in the beacon to being a mast arm overhead flashing beacon. That way you don't have to have the buttons or anything blocking the median island refuge area.
Good.
What will it feel like, though, when you're crossing it? What is a mountable? I'm sorry, I don't know what all these things look like.
It'll be flush, Corinne.
Okay.
So
you won't know when you're in the median?
You will.
You'll just walk across?
There'll be truncated domes in the median
okay.
as well. Yeah.
Okay, so you'll feel those and you'll walk across. Okay. Because
yeah.
I remember Kim was talking about islands, curbs that cut through the median, but now that's all changed.
Yeah, this would, it's basically, when I say mountable, the curb is rolled, so it's not a straight vertical roll, a straight vertical face, and so it's, for pedestrians, it would just be a pass-through, and truncated domes on each side adjacent to the travel lane.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
That'll be interesting.
And there'll also be some improvements headed to on Siskiyou Boulevard from Walker to Tolman as well. Ramp improvements and crosswalk improvements, marked crosswalks.
Great. Progress. Okay, we're a little over time here. I think I will call the meeting to, I'll adjourn the meeting.
Okay. Scott, how long will it take to get the walker to sit to Tolman going?
That is all part of the same project that I believe is all going to be bid in September.
Oh, good, because that's so hard out here.
Yeah. Jenna was on that call yesterday and we talked about it. So she's got your back and she's got Bill's back for sure
oh,
on
good.
Some of the improvements.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Good night,
thank
everyone.
You.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for hanging in there, Steve.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.